Hey, what's up? Welcome back. This is, of course, David Scales. Before we get into the episode, I just wanted to share some news. Big, exciting update for the Surf Splendor Network. Today marks the first day that we actually bring on an affiliate of the show. Not exactly a sponsor. Exactly how this works is you're probably aware, because you've heard me talk about it, we have a donation platform set up on surfsplendorpodcast.com. You can make a one-time donation, you can subscribe and make a monthly contribution of $5, $10, or $20. A lot of you are subscribers, and we just wanted to provide a thank you and also an incentive for other people who have been sitting on the fence considering subscribing, an incentive for you people to actually join and subscribe to the show. So that is how this is going to work. Everybody who subscribes to Surf Splendor for the next month, the entire month of August, you will all be entered for a chance to win a custom, one-of-a-kind board bag. I'll get into the board bags in just a minute. What I wanted to say before I do, though, is that I've had sponsors approach me for the show, and I've just never felt like it was an exact right fit. And I've always wanted to ensure that it was kind of an organic thing and that the ethos of the brand fit the ethos of the show and just my own personal, beliefs and what I would use and what I'd feel comfortable supporting. And this actually turns out to be a perfect, perfect jumping off point. The founder of the company that I'm going to tell you about is an old friend of mine. We worked in the wine business together. He's an East Coast surfer, grew up sponsored by Rusty and the whole nine. A competitive surfer, and he's listened to every single episode of this show, in fact, and he's also provided me with a lot of feedback over the years for the style of the show, for, branding and logos more recently, and aesthetic, and just everything. So he's been a great supporter of the show, and I would say a partner of this show. And then he started a board bag company, a year ago or so, and he's grown that to a point where he's ready to kind of advertise it to the masses. And turns out to be a perfect fit. So we're calling this an affiliate program. And so a little bit about his brand and his board bag company. It's called Motai, and it's short for a Japanese concept called Motanai, which is a concept basically states that any waste is regretful. So, and it's used with an exclamation point, like, what a waste, don't waste. So the root word is the name of the board bag company, Motai. And the idea is that they actually used recycled wetsuit parts to make these custom board bags. So really, really cool concept. And I know I have three or four wetsuits in my garage that I will never wear again. But obviously, I can't stand to throw them away. So I've thought about ways to use them. That is how they are making the board bags. Recycled wetsuit materials with a little bit of really interesting fabrics and leathers incorporated into them. They also include a water-resistant stash pocket. So these are board bags that there's nothing else like on the market, like a completely new radical style of board bag. So for the purposes of this affiliate program, if you subscribe to Surf Splendor Podcast, you'll be included and entered to win a bag valued up to $250. There's no size restrictions. It will be made to your specifications for the board of your choosing. It includes an allowance for the add-on stash pocket or cutaway for a large single fin. You can choose from any style of fabric currently in stock. It's transferable and giftable, but no cash value. It must be used within 3 months of winning this program. And what's even cooler is that even if you don't win this board bag, only one person will win. Even if you don't win it, anybody who has in the past or up through this entire month of August that makes a financial subscription to this podcast will also receive 15% off their first order of a Motai custom board bag. So super cool program. Big shout out to Motai. I'll have a link to their website on surfsplendorpodcast.com. And then, of course, that's also where you can access the donation link, surfsplendorpodcast.com/donate. And get on the program. We would be thrilled to have you. All of this kind of revitalized and reinvigorated content that you've been getting over the last 6 months is an absolute direct reflection of those who have contributed financially to this show. So I'm fully committed to continuing that level of work and production on this program. And in fact, I'm going to be ramping it up even more so. So your contributions, affiliate programs like this with Motai are what make all of that possible. And hey, guess what? They're super rad board bags and everybody should have one. So it's a win, win, win. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for participating. And without further ado, here's today's show, Grit with Chaz Smith. So we normally, you know, have to start out the show by saying thanks to Surfrider Foundation, yeah. Surfrider.org, but we have an even better studio today than Surfrider.
It's really fantastic. It's a dream. It is a dream, like mid-century modern dream zone.
Yeah, thankfully I've got family that lives in San Diego, so which is Chaz's neck of the woods. So we just figured while I'm down here, we might as well get the show done so we don't have to travel up to San Clemente together.
It feels right.
It does feel right. And you came prepared, man. What do you got there?
I've got my standard, and I thank Derek Riley for this, quite frankly. We were in Palm Springs not too long ago, both working on our books, having a little writer's retreat. And Derek, I think I was drinking some... whatever, I can't even remember. It was some vodka cocktail. And Derek ordered a vodka coconut water. And I thought, well, that's just the most disgusting thing ever. And he just looked at me and said, just try it. And when it came, I tried it. And I've been on vodka coconut for a long time now.
I just took a hit off Chaz's. It's remarkably good.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
As I said, off the mic, it's like it makes the coconut water taste better. It sure does. And you drink the fancy vodka too, huh?
This is not that fancy. It's a vodka from Seattle. And so I just like supporting the Pacific Northwest.
I see.
So it's, I think Alu vodka. It's called Alu vodka.
I was joking about it being fancy because it actually looks super inexpensive.
Yeah.
I thought it was a plastic bottle actually.
No, I think it's a mid-range, but it's made in Seattle and it is, yeah. Anytime I can support the Pacific Northwest, I do, to be honest.
It's very nice of you.
I've talked
That's where
trash.
All that Warshaw phrase comes from.
He's there. That Matt Warshaw.
Where were you guys staying in Palm Springs?
I was staying at the Parker, and Derek was staying at the Ace.
Oh,
so
okay.
We were in two different hotels, but then we would meet up at the Ace for our little writer's days or sessions.
So did you intentionally stay in separate quarters?
No, I was there with family
and
with my family, and he was there solo, and so... Yeah,
I did the same thing last weekend. I did a retreat.
Yeah,
not a writer's retreat, but I just needed to finish a couple of work projects, and I can't get them done whenever I stay home.
No,
even if I have the weekend off and like no social obligations, I just cannot get creative work done. So I was like, I need to schedule creative time, and went out there and I have family who lives just like in the Indio area, so a little past Palm Springs, but I stayed in Palm Springs proper, and it is radical.
Yeah.
Dude.
Have you not done much Palm Springs?
Not since I was younger.
Yeah.
Not like
perfect.
As an adult.
In terms of like creating stuff, I feel even though everything I've created there has been trash, when I'm there, like you get a little boozy, you swim in the pool, and then you work, and then you just go back and forth between boozing, swimming, and working. And you can get on a real rhythm of that, which I feel, again, my work that I've produced in Palm Springs has been, I think all of it has been total throwaway. So maybe if the work that I did with Derek there is not throwaway, then we have vodka coconut to thank.
Speaking of vodka, do we have a vodka sponsor for the show yet?
No.
Aren't we supposed to be working on that?
I do need to get one. So if anybody is out there who's listening, has a vodka hookup, like, I will gladly drink vodka every show, and I have no problem drinking vodka at 8 in the morning. I have no problem drinking it at 10 at night. Vodka to me is a breakfast, lunch, and dinner thing. So if there is a vodka sponsor, don't worry. You'll get your plug.
I would think, like you said, I think it was off the mic, like with the coconut water too, it's okay to do in the morning because
sure.
you're rehydrating
sure.
while you're dehydrated.
No, it's healthy.
It's perfect.
I feel it keeps me in perfect stasis where it's like doing nothing at all.
Perfect.
Yep.
I love it. Well, dude, let's get caught up on, let's pull back the curtain from the grit curtain.
Let's do it. Let's
behind the scenes, dude. Last time we were talking, you broke the news that you guys fired Michael Chiaramella.
We did. Is that how you pronounce it?
I don't know. Okay. Wasn't that how you pronounced it?
I think I said Sierra Morella, but
you did.
I don't know that I've ever heard him say his own last name. So you may be right.
Yeah, I don't Italian. Know either. Yeah, I think
Sierra Morella.
I don't know, dude. Yeah, because Chow, C I is Chow.
Sure. Yeah.
So Sierra Morella. That would make sense. Well, anyways, we posted that podcast and it was published by quote the editors.
Yep.
Then we've seen articles by Steve Van Rees, Giancarlo Guardasconi, I think is his name.
Yeah.
James Booth. Who are all these people, dude?
Amazing people.
Really?
I have no idea.
Okay.
my favorites, that's the best part for me is, so, there's amazing things happening. Derek is a far better editor than me, and far better at, I think, finding talent. And so these guys come through Derek all, right? And so when I wake up in the morning, obviously he's in Australia, I'm in California. And when I wake up in the morning and read these guys, reading what he finds these days, I've been totally impressed. I really, really like the Van Rees guy. Or is that his name?
Yeah. Steve Van Rees. Yeah.
Yeah. He's been, and, Guardasconi.
Yeah.
Is that his name? Guardasconi. He's been doing the five biggest surf flies. Or five most fantastic surf flies or whatever that Stab ripped off bald-faced, which was pretty funny. But I've loved those. And then Booth's stuff I've really enjoyed too. So, like, when these guys come in, I have no idea they're coming, and I wake up in the morning and read them, and I've thoroughly enjoyed. I don't know if other people have enjoyed, but I've been enjoying it.
So there's no discussion between you and Derek about the direction that the site's going or stylistically or anything like that? It just shows up and you're as surprised as I am?
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
And I mean, I guess that's a... I mean, Derek and I have been working together so long that I feel the only way he could surprise me, I think, is if he put something super kooky on, which I do some kooky stuff every once in a while, you know, or put some kooky stuff up, and he has too, not his own stuff, but other people.
Yeah.
And I think both of us text the other right when we put it up and apologize. But yeah, there's been no apology given or needed for those three, I think. Do you,
okay.
I mean, do you agree?
I totally agree.
Do you read them and think, well, what is this?
No, not at all. I totally agree, but I just wonder, like, the inner workings of the site and the partnership, you know? And I think that, I don't know, my interpretation of Beach Grit as a whole has just been that you guys just throw stuff against the wall, and if it sticks, you continue doing it. If it doesn't, then you adapt the other way. And I think, like, that is the way that kind of the tech world runs, is like, hey, fail forward, you know?
Sure.
Just like try it, and if it doesn't work, adapt.
It's one thing that I've been thinking about this a lot lately, just because I've been pretty serious about Beach Grit now, like more serious than I've ever been for the last 3 months, I think, or 4 months. And thinking a lot about it and a lot more about it in a lot more kind of serious ways. And to me, that is the number one, the best part about Beach Grit is just its honesty. And so when we do, we throw stuff up. If it doesn't work, to be able to admit, okay, you know, we blew it on that. That wasn't working. Let's move this way. But just to be really forward about it and never kind of try to hide anything.
Yeah.
Just, yeah, be failing. Not only, I mean, if you say we're failing forward, that's nice, but also failing publicly. And to me, as long as we're doing everything we're doing publicly, then it's funny because,
yeah,
you know, there's no, okay, we're, you know, pulling a punch. We never pull stories down.
Yeah.
If something is a total joke, then we'll leave it up there and just take the hits, you know, from the commenters, deservedly so.
Yeah.
Because we blew it.
Well, I guess that's a perfect segue into a argument that you got into with Stab Magazine, right?
Oh, yeah.
Dude, break it down. What I almost feel like we need to actually back up and explain. Derek Riley, who's your partner in Beach Grit, was a founder
of Stab.
Stab Magazine. The founder or co-founder?
Co-founder. So he and Sam McIntosh founded Stab Magazine, I don't know the exact years, a long time ago, or a while ago. Both of them, I think, were at, I'm going to get it wrong, but I think it was Waves Magazine in Australia. Both of them were at Waves or Trax or one of those. And then, yeah, broke off and started Stab together. Stab went well. Derek was bought out by Sam at some point.
Do you know why Derek left?
Why Derek left Stab?
Yeah.
I think Derek just had other opportunities that he wanted to pursue, and so he wanted the cash then, as opposed to, you know, kind of waiting and seeing what Stab was going to do. I can't remember exactly what Derek did with the money, but he invested it into something that didn't work, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Derek's never been bitter about it. Like, he's always, I mean, to keep the story going forward, I guess. Sam then sold to Surf Stitch for a reported, what was the reported amount?
I forget at this point.
Yeah, I think it was a reported $10 million or $5 million or something like that. But and I think people have felt that Derek was bitter about that, losing out on the big payday or the theoretical big payday, because Surf Stitch is now broke. And, you know, obviously with those kinds of sales, I don't know how much of it was all stock options or whatever. But, Derek's never been one ounce of bitter about that. He's always, I think, publicly and to me and, you know, to anybody I've ever heard him talk to, is real to, you know, tip his cap to Sam for selling, for like smoking it on the sale.
Yeah, and it's not like Derek got muscled out of his own brand.
No.
Like he chose out.
Sure,
yeah,
totally.
So nothing to be bitter about. So Stab has gone on to continue doing what they're doing, and then Derek at some point co-founded Beach Grit with you and is now doing that. So how did your guys' paths cross again?
So Derek brought me on at Stab super early on. I had written some things for Vice that he read and then brought me on, you know, or just have me write some stuff for Stab. And the writing for Derek was the funnest thing I had ever done. And I was never a journalist, right? Or never even a writer. Like, I accidentally slipped into it myself. And so writing for Derek and writing for Stab, that was it for me. Like, getting back then, I don't even think there was any online when I first started. There was no online presence. So just getting the magazines in the mail and just seeing Derek's vision and my voice as part of that vision, I loved it, right? I loved Derek's, you know, to me, he's a absolute genius in surf, and not that he's not respected, but he just really is. I think he's pretty humble and stays behind the scenes a lot.
Yeah.
But just his vision and his voice and the way he pushes things is brilliant. So like Derek and I then had a run at Stab, right? Where, Derek was editing, I was writing. At some point, I think I was writing like 80% of every issue.
Wow.
And then once Derek left, got bought out, I lost interest, or didn't lose interest, but Derek was my touch point, you know, more than Stab. So at that point, I kind of went to Surfing Magazine and, you know, was writing for other places as well then, I think mostly Surfing. But Derek went on to try a couple different business ventures, but then came back to the realization that, okay, it's going to be surf where I'm going to make my real mark, and it's going to be with the thing that, you know, I own. So he approached me, I think now probably 4 years ago, and said, I'm starting, you know, a new website called Beach Grit, and I want you to be a partner in it. And so Derek is the one man in the world, I think, that I would never say no to. So okay. I didn't want to at all. When he approached me, I was working on Welcome to Paradise, and that was my swan song to get out of surfing, right?
Yeah.
But Derek, yeah, I couldn't say no to Derek. And so then, yeah, that was 4 years ago. It took us a year to kind of get up and running. And 2 days ago was Beach Crit's third birthday.
Was it really?
Yep.
Did you guys post something about it?
No, I just saw it on the Facebook. This thing happened 3 years ago, and it wasn't even on my Facebook. It was on Derek's daughter, who reposted it. I guess Beach Crit went live August 2nd, whenever.
Amazing.
3 years ago.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah,
thank you.
Dude.
3 years old.
Man.
Yeah, it's in preschool, Beach Crit.
Exciting.
Yeah.
So then let's bring it up to this last week or two. What was the encounter with Sam McIntosh? You ran into him at Agenda, was it?
I did. And, you know, Sam came to my wedding, right? He flew to Australia.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He flew from Australia with Derek to my wedding. Like, I genuinely love Sam, honestly. And, you know, when all the time that I was riding for Stab, I think I went to Australia, I don't know, 3 times. And then I lived in Australia for a year. And I stayed at Sam's house a lot of the time, right? I stayed with Derek most of the time, but, Sam, you know, I mean, I crashed on Sam's couch a number of times, and Sam has been nothing but gracious and wonderful. Right. So I ran into him at Agenda, and of course at Beach Grit, I've been tossing pebbles at Stab since almost the start. And it wasn't just because, our first thing on Beach Grit, one of the first things we did, I finagled a video of Bethany Hamilton. I had to work really, really hard at it. Bethany threw, like, it was a proper air reverse. And
Aaron Lieber shot it.
Yeah, exactly. Aaron Lieber shot it. And I had to fight so hard, but I went back and forth between Bethany and Lever. Beach Grit had just started, and I got the clip exclusively on Beach Grit, right? They gave me the clip. I threw it up. Stab ripped it not 24 hours later with no credit given that it was on Beach Grit. And so that to me was, I would have never gone after Stab without that, right? So when they did that with no credit given to Beach Grit on this thing that I had to work my ass off to get, I thought, okay, the gloves are on, you know, not gloves off at that point, but gloves are on. And it was from that point on that I started, you know, jabbing at Stab.
Okay. So I wonder how you feel about that now. I mean, as the internet has evolved in the last 3 years, everybody steals everything from everyone. And especially in new platforms like Instagram, I know you repost tons of videos of everybody else, and it's commonplace.
Sure, but I'll always, and at Beach Grit, 100%, I will credit whatever I find, wherever I find it. On Instagram, I try. Sometimes yeah. I fail because it's, you know, I'll get sent videos by people, so I'll credit the person who sent it to me.
Yeah.
And then the person who shot it will reach out and say, you know, hey, what are you doing? That's mine. I will credit them right away. On Beach Grit, every story I find, if it's not generated from me, I will say, as you know, first read on Stab, the inertia, Surfline, whatever it is. And to me, that's the baseline of journalistic ethics. I know anybody can look at Beach Grit and say there's no ethic there, but on Beach Grit, I've never, ever, ever, ever once ripped a story without crediting where it came from. Because to me, there's no point, right? People are going to still, we have a better headline probably, and a funnier picture and a funnier take. I'm happy to share where it came from. And again, to me, on the internet, it's not a zero-sum game, right? Like, one person doesn't only go to one website. So if I say, this came from the inertia, and not only will I say where it came from, I'll put a link to the original article, right?
Sure.
Again, even if it's one of our theoretical competitors, right, like the inertia or Stab or Surfline or Surfer or wherever, because who cares? Go read it there too. Like,
yeah,
why not? You're here, go there. Maybe you'll get a different perspective. And it drives me bananas. This is the thing that drives me craziest of all, I think. Surf media refuses. Everybody is such pussies that they'll just put the blinders on, I think, and think, okay, if we don't mention anybody else, then nobody else is there, which is just absolutely ludicrous to me. Like, why not say where you found something? And we've been ripped off by all of them 1,000 times. And at this point, I don't really care. But even with Stab, you know, honestly, a few days ago, ripping off a Beach Grit whole concept of the 5 Great Lies of Surf Media, where they did like the 5 outrageous or the outrageous scams in surf or something.
Yeah.
And it was a direct ripoff. Okay, great. Fine. They're the ones who look stupid on that because, you
totally.
Know, and people will get in their comments and say, oh, I think I read this on Beach Grit already. Right?
Right.
But just like, if we can all have the baseline of, if you get something from somewhere else, and I'm not talking about like major news that's everywhere, like stuff that hits the newspapers, you know, or stuff that's on the internet. Obviously, if I get it first, I don't expect a credit because I just got it from, you know, the San Jose Mercury News or whatever.
Right.
But if I originate some content, or if you originate some content, then I expect at least, you know, the New York Post does it to, or I mean, the Washington Post does it to the New York Times, and et cetera, et cetera. You'll never read a proper newspaper not credit where something came from, like all the Trump stuff or whatever. You know, they'll always credit who broke the story as, you know, first uncovered by CNN or whatever it is, right?
Absolutely.
And it drives me bananas that doesn't happen in surf.
Yeah, I wonder with that Aaron Lieber clip of Bethany Hamilton, if there's any recourse for Lieber, like if he sold you exclusive rights to it.
He didn't sell it. And
okay.
And I guess truth be told, Stab could have gone to Lieber too, or could have gone directly to Lieber. But we had it up first, right? We had it
Got
up
it.
For a good, it was ours first because, full disclosure, at that time my wife was representing Bethany Hamilton. And so I had seen it. And I had gone hard, and it wasn't easy, right? Like, I had to work. It was a solid week of trying to convince both Bethany and Lieber that Beach Grit, this brand new platform, was the place to launch this clip.
Mm-hmm.
So whether Lieber then went and gave it to Stab or whatever happened, we were the ones that had it first exclusively, and Stab blatantly ripped us off at that point. And so, and again, at that point, I thought, fuck you. Like,
right.
This was completely unnecessary and rude. It would have been very easy to say, you know, as first, you know, uncovered or whatever on Beach Grit and then put it up themselves. But right. if they're too big of sissies to not do that, then at that point I thought, okay, I'm gonna start having fun with you guys. Like, and not like gloves off, not full bloody brawl, but I'm going to start poking.
Yeah. So what was the most recent poke?
I mean, I can't even remember. At this, okay. point, at this point, there's been so many.
Yeah, well, with Macintosh, there was just a story recently that he had said that you guys are basically, like, pandering to the lowest common denominator
sure.
or something like to that effect.
I mean, okay, and so then this made me, again, go crazy because Macintosh did an interview with, I think it was Surf Business News, maybe? Is that what it was?
I don't even remember.
It was some yeah. website that I had not seen before, but it was a fine, you know, a good another surf website, and I think it's totally valuable and important for people to start new stuff, right? And surf business is a real specific thing, and if somebody wants to really focus on that, that's totally awesome. And it was a great interview with Sam about, you know, Stab and where they're going and what they've done and all of this kind of stuff. But then in the middle there, the interview asked him about Beach Crit, and Sam uncharacteristically attacked Derek, which to me, that was like wild bananas, because Derek has never once said, you know, I mean, I love Derek. I feel, yeah, Derek is my best friend in this world. Derek has never said one cross word about either Stab or Sam to me. And I can't imagine he's out there saying cross words publicly.
Yeah.
I'm the one who got frustrated by Stab because of the Bethany clip early on, and yeah. then have continued to be frustrated by their utter lack of, I mean, they're just, I'm sorry, it's just a retarded publication. And when Sam then blamed Derek for what I was doing, I thought, no, you don't get away with that, because Sam has my email, he has my number. He could have called me and said, hey,
right.
what's wrong with you? Don't do this. And I would have gladly had a back and forth with Sam about why I was doing it. Sam kicked Derek under the bus rudely and maliciously, I thought, by saying Derek had, you know, some kind of axe to grind because Sam sold the business and Derek wasn't involved. And all of it was just, it was really weak-willed, I thought, of Sam to do that. And so, you know, then I got to go after Sam. I had never mentioned Sam, or I mean, maybe had mentioned his name before, but never had written anything specifically. It was always, my beef with Stab was always just on goofy yeah. advertorial they'd done, or, you know, Morgan Williamson had written something funny or whatever. I had never mentioned Sam until that point. And then I thought, okay, gloves are off, because Sam had also gone out, or was rumored, or I'd heard he'd gone out and warned advertisers off coming onto Beach Grit,
oh my
where
gosh.
He said, you go on Beach Grit and you don't get into Surf Stitch.
Right.
So, yeah.
Fun. So, have you talked to him personally since this most recent stuff? Or
no.
has Derek?
No,
did
no,
Derek
no.
get his feelings hurt? Like, what's...
No, Derek, I mean, Derek is... Like, that's the thing, is Derek is... I think I don't know if Derek got his feelings hurt. I think it would be hard to read something in print that was genuinely below the belt, and not true. And I think Derek feels like, well, you know, Sam has a point. I mean, Derek literally would say to me often, like, please, it's not a good look for you to go after Stab, right? Just don't do it for me. And I wouldn't listen to Derek because I thought, what are you talking about? I love you, Derek, but I'm going to hammer Stab because this yeah. is fun for me, right?
Yeah.
I'll have my vodka coconut waters. And I mean, that's when the real hammering happens.
Of course.
And I'll think, this is go time right now.
It's when the best podcasting happens.
Sure. And just do something funny. And Derek would only ever say, please don't. And then I think he thought, okay, well, I can't control it, so I'm not going to tell you please don't. And poor little Derek, he's not little, sorry, Derek. Poor Derek is the one who takes the brunt of it, even in Bondi, right? Where I think people will come up to Derek and say, oh, you had a crack at Stab again. And it's not Derek having cracks, it's me having cracks.
Right.
But Derek's the one who has to deal with it.
Well, bigger picture. You guys started our Beach Grit 3 years ago now. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
What were your original objectives, and do you feel like you've fulfilled those objectives 3 years on?
I think so. I think we're moving towards fulfilling the original objectives. The conclusion, as I've been, again, thinking about it in a lot more, I guess, just being more thoughtful about it, is that surfing, that I used to kind of, I guess I never giggled at it, but you know the shirt or the hat that is the surf industry came in and stole my culture and all I got was this hat or shirt or whatever. Like, yeah. I always thought it was kind of, you know, sour grapes. But then the more I've been doing Beach Grit, and just lately I've realized that's totally true. There's no outlet for the guy who really, really genuinely surfs and loves surfing to be just honest. Like, everything is packaged. Everything is being shoved down his throat, either from the brands that are, you know, and not all the brands, but so much of it is just this packaged thing of what surfing is supposed to be. All of the surf media is artificial and, you know, won't get into any kind of serious conversations. I mean, I think, so you have the Surfers Journal at the top, right? Surfers Journal is a beautiful, beautiful publication that tells honest and real and powerful stories, but it's also for the most heady surfer, right? Who has time to sit and really think about this stuff. Surfers Journal is honest, I believe, with what the sport is at the highest, smartest level. Most surfers aren't at the highest and smartest levels. They're just guys who are there, who want to do this thing and maybe talk about this thing and have fun. Nothing caters to this guy. And that's where I feel Beach Grit has really succeeded. I feel in the entire surf media space, we're the only ones that are honest. We're the only ones that have a laugh and a crack at other people, have a laugh and have a crack at ourselves. We'll, you know, when we fail, we'll write 10 articles on how we blew it, and let everybody chime in. And again, this user generated kind of thing, I know is a cliche, but I feel Beach Grit in so many ways is user generated in that it's the people who come onto Beach Grit and participate in this community, are the ones that actually drive the conversation, drive the stories that go up. And so it's finally honest, and it's one place that is honest. And I can't think of another place in surfing from the WSL on anywhere else that's just honest.
Well, I agree with you. And I think that it is user submitted content, not just Steve Van Rees and the guys who are sending articles over to Derek, but the comment section, which we talked about last time. It's just anybody can go in there and make a comment. And it is a more accurate gauge on surf culture than anything that Surfer Magazine is packaging for me, like you said. I had a really interesting conversation with a guy I ordered a board from. I don't know if you know him, but he's a writer for the Surfers Journal. His name's Dave Parmenter.
I mean, I've never met Dave, but I'm doing the Lisa Anderson film right now, and Lisa and Dave were engaged.
I did not know that about Dave.
Yep. It'll come out. Lisa Anderson movie.
Because he was married to Raoul's son.
Yep, of course he was. Yeah. He was engaged to Lisa.
Yeah, first. Good to know, man. Yep. So anyways, I was talking to Dave because I was ordering a board from him on the phone, and he's been on this podcast, and we're actually going to be doing a recurring show together every quarter.
Amazing.
Because he's a super, I mean, the guy, he's like genius.
He's a complete genius.
Yeah, and like unbelievable knowledge of surf history and just a really, really smart dude with not enough outlets actually to share all those things. And so we were having that exact conversation that you're talking about, which he said, he goes, look, surfers used to have the answers. Like in the 60s and the 70s, like they were the forward thinkers on environmentalism, on living a healthy lifestyle, like veganism and all that sort of stuff. It has gotten to the point now where it's what you said, where everything runs through filters that are controlled by brands that are then packaged and regurgitated. And the average surfer who's actually living the lifestyle is very disconnected from what is being outwardly portrayed as what a surfer is. And I argued back with him. I was like, you know, you've got a good point, except that I'm now seeing things, and I used Beach Grit as an example. I was like, I'm now seeing things like Beach Grit's comments section where there's the answers. The answers are there, and there's people making – it's an elevated discourse. I think sometimes on Beach Grit and certainly on Stab, it just ends up people making fun of each other. But if you kind of see through some of that stuff, it is an elevated discourse about more meaningful things, you know? And so I feel like you guys are doing a good job of starting to kind of notice that and curate it. And obviously you brought on the comment or the who's the guy?
Negatron.
Yeah. What is his job, though?
He's
moderator.
Moderator. Yeah.
You brought on the moderator a year ago to kind of manage a lot of that.
And to me, Negatron is an absolute genius because things do or can get out of control, right? And
yeah.
I think Negatron is the unsung hero of Beach Crit, like, honestly and truly, about keeping the tone of what is the conversation that needs to happen and is open to everything, right? Like, you can say anything you want, but if it's just cruel and taking the conversation in a weird place, then it just doesn't belong.
Yeah.
And he's happy to warn people and then knock them off.
Totally. And I think that's great. And I want to, I think Surfer Magazine, their message board, it's a message, like a forum, basically. Like, they've had interesting things happening over there, but it's so outdated. Just the layout of it, and it's, if you don't know how to use it, you're never going to go learn how to use it.
I got on, people thought that yeah, I had been a troll on there, and I honestly had never been on there in my life.
Oh,
and
really?
So I made a, you know, Chaz Smith, whatever thing to go on there. And I did to answer a couple questions, but I haven't been on since.
I don't really go on, but
not because I don't want to. Like, that's awesome that that's happening, but it just is a clunky, like, it's really, I can't even remember my password anymore. And it's like a clunky, weird thing.
It looks like when the internet was first invented, then message boards started. That's what that is.
Yeah.
Well, I've really taken that exact thought seriously with the podcast, because so many of the conversations we have on here then spill out into Instagram conversations next week, comments on the website, big long email exchanges I get in with listeners. And I realized, I'm like, there needs to be a platform for these things to where you can actually reply back and forth and the thread is recognizable and followable for other people who want to chime in and stuff. And so I'm not sure what the best platform for that is. You guys are doing a great job with it, I think. But it's ripe, dude. And
yeah. I mean, again, to me, that's what Beach Crit is. That's where Beach Crit is succeeding, is Beach Crit is true and it's honest.
And
you know, maybe we're wrong and maybe it skews this way or this way or this way, but it's always, it's guided by, and always will be guided by, you know, by some, like, trying to achieve some kind of truth, whatever that means in surfing at this minute.
Yeah.
And when we fail, you know, again, there's no burying stuff. It's just, oops.
Right.
Like, we blew it.
Not to compare you guys here, but make this political, but Donald Trump has been a super interesting figure to watch things that would sink other ships. You know, he makes so many mistakes all the time, just complete blunders, and just charges ahead. And again, things that would sink not only presidents, but, like, if you were a cashier at Starbucks and you said that, you would get fired,
sure,
you know?
Totally.
Like, and then, so it's made me kind of rethink what you can do or what you can get away with. And I'm not trying to get away with anything, but I think at times, you know, we say things that we regret later. And if you just, you know, it doesn't have to sink you. You don't have to lose your job.
Totally. I mean, and I think that's a brilliant analogy in that, you know, love him or hate him, Donald Trump has changed communication.
Yes.
And
yes.
And to not look at it and learn from it, I think is a big disservice. Like, I think it's real easy to get caught up in both Donald Trump love and Donald Trump hate. But if you can take one step back and just think, okay, there is a paradigm shift happening here with communication. And I think that's what, you know, again, whether you think he's a liar or, you know, a prophet, is neither here nor there for me. It's just people feel something, and this willingness to kind of, everybody, you know, in the normal news, they get really mad at him for saying all this crazy stuff. And sure, I get it, right?
Yeah.
A lot of it sounds crazy or seems crazy. But his continuing to just roll down this hill, there's something fascinating about that. I would love Beach Crit to be the Donald Trump of surf media.
It's fascinating. I heard somebody talking about it about this week. I forget who it was, but they were talking about, before he got elected, remember there was that grab her by the pussy bit?
Of course.
Where Billy Bush, who's like an entertainment reporter, was standing with him off before they started recording, but the cameras were actually on. And Donald Trump said that, you know, about a chick. And Billy Bush just, like, kind of laughed about it. He didn't approve it. He didn't say it was wrong. He just laughed about it because he was going to have to interview the guy for the next 30 minutes. So he just went along with it. Well, what happened is Billy Bush apologized. Like, oh, I want to apologize to my wife and my kids and the American public. I should have stood up for women and told him, you know, and I would not interview him that day, whatever. Well, Billy Bush took that apology line and got fired and lost his job, and where is he today?
Sure.
I have no idea. But probably not in entertainment.
No, I think he just came back and did some kind of, like, thing, but yeah.
Whereas Donald Trump, the guy who actually said the thing,
president of the United
went
States.
On to become president because he didn't apologize to anybody.
Nope.
He didn't acknowledge it. He was just like, whatever, moving on.
Yeah.
My focus is over here. I don't care what you guys are saying about me. And the guy who had nothing to do with it lost his job.
Totally.
And fascinating.
And I guess there's the, like, great example, and there's a balance in there somewhere between the Billy Bush and the Donald Trump, right? Where Billy totally clearly was agreeing with what Donald Trump was saying in the time, like, even if he was just a spineless, like, going along with it because he had to or whatever. Donald Trump said it. Donald Trump never said it was wrong after that, and Billy Bush, you know, went off the deep end of crying and lost a job. There's some middle ground there, I feel, where if you say something stupid, where this is, again, not that I'm praising Beach Grit way too much here, but when Beach Grit says something stupid, to be able to acknowledge that, okay, that was dumb, but still leave it up there and take the hits for it and then move on, right?
Totally.
Where you don't, there's always a reason for saying something stupid. Like, I mean, I think, right?
Yeah.
Like when Donald Trump said they grabbed him by the pussy, it was awful. It was a, you know, me as, you know, I'm married and have two daughters. It was like a vile, vile thing to say. And he should have apologized whole hog, et cetera, et cetera. But again, you don't just you don't end it right there. You say, I totally blew it. And then moving on. And then Donald Trump got to the moving on real quick, which good on him for that.
Yeah, I agree. Talking about you're praising Beach Grit way too much. Where has Beach Grit failed, do you think?
Oh, I think Beach Grit has failed. Sorry, I'm trying to pour.
Yeah,
more
pour water. Your glass. Don't worry. Yeah.
Beach Grit has failed by, I don't think we, I've interviewed so many surfers in my life, and it's really hard for me to pick up the phone and just call surfers when stuff happens. It's a lot easier just to aggregate stuff. That's where Beach Grit has gone. I love the low hanging fruit. The low hanging fruit is just as sweet, as they say. But I think we could do a lot better job of breaking new stories by really going after surfers. And that's all my fault. It's just hard. It's hard in a day. You know, my pace, I usually try to get 3 stories up a day and then all the business stuff, you know, on the backside that has to happen, which is no excuse. But
waiting for the surfer to reply and all that sort of stuff just takes time.
Exactly. But that's where I would love to see Beach Grit go more, is going right to the source, having more better kind of surfer, surf industry, surf people, direct kind of interviews.
Got it.
When you're hiring for a small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role, and there's no faster or effective way than through LinkedIn Jobs. Your time and capital are precious, and there is a powerful resource that can help you focus on what you're good at and integrate people into your team seamlessly to help grow your business. LinkedIn Jobs has created the tools to find the right professionals for your team efficiently and for free. LinkedIn isn't just another job board. Everyone is already on LinkedIn with their resumes and references, and now LinkedIn has designed a hiring platform to connect you with candidates specifically qualified for the job that you post about. More than 1 billion professionals meticulously organized to connect people by skill set to help us all advance our position. 2.5 million businesses already use LinkedIn for hiring, and 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. It's that fast, easy to use, and effective. LinkedIn Jobs can help you write job descriptions, filter the right person to you, and give you the tools to help you interview them like a pro. LinkedInJobs.com/surf is where you go to post your job for free. Yes, totally free. That's linkedinjobs.com/surf to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply.
Talking about kind of bigger picture Beach Grit things, what does the future look like?
Sure. The future is big at Beach Grit. Yeah, we have, if anybody knows, the website The Barracks, which is, I think it's one of the most successful action sports sites ever. And so we have the guy that basically built The Barracks now as our business partner at Beach Grit.
Awesome.
He's our business manager, and so yeah, he's a very sober, unlike me, and single-minded sort who's both brilliant and wonderful. And so he's been kind of combing over our business. Derek and I, if anybody knows Derek and I, then they know we're just riders at the end of the day. Yeah. And, you know, we're clowns. Our business manager is not a clown. He's a very serious man who has done very serious things. So
those guys look for people who build organic businesses, and you guys have done that.
Oh, and that's, so. I think that's what he saw, right? He saw that Beach Grit is filling this. He wouldn't have come on if he didn't see what it could be. And that's what made me, pay more attention to it in the last few months of, we actually have built something, even if we're clowns. And yeah, so taking it seriously, and in taking it seriously, it doesn't mean being any less irreverent or any less beach gritty. It's all, you know, in a way, it's just, how do we make being beach gritty bigger?
It's hard when you're so focused on content creation all the time to really look at the bigger picture of things and figure out how to grow the business. So it's important to be able to bring on people like that.
Totally. Yeah. So that's, yeah.
But it's hard to relinquish control too.
I mean, Derek and I, or I'll speak for myself, I'm so happy to relinquish that control. Oh my goodness. Like, I don't know. I don't know the first thing about growing a business. And I know it's important. I know that, you know, Beach Creek can't just be a hobby, because if it's a hobby, it goes nowhere. And then, you know, at year five, it ends and Derek and I bow and say, thanks for the laughs, and go off stage and that's it. Right.
Yeah.
Where I want Beach Grit to live for a long time. I want it to be what it is for a long time. But the only way for that to happen is if it actually turns into something that's sustainable.
It turns into an actual business.
Precisely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing it's not just so, you can get rich and cash out. It's to make the business work. I mean, Derek and I have never taken 1 cent. All we've done is paid into Beach Crew, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's an out of the pocket labor of love, with the hope that someday we can make something that's, you know, actually worth something. But, in this kind of interim time, it is like you need money to do what you want to do, to make stuff that people like. And that's where we're at.
Yeah. You know, I've often in my life felt, like I'm so apprehensive to ever ask anybody for money. And I feel like I'm just underpaid in all the jobs that I've ever done, because I just want to make sure that the employer is getting the better of the exchange and that they're thrilled with it. But you get to a point where you got to realize, like, you can't move forward. Like, you have a value, and Beach Grit has built that value. And I think readers of it are at a point where it's a bigger part of their life than any other surf media is, probably. And they're willing to pay for it, whether that means they have to sit through advertisements or they have to actually pay a subscription fee, whatever it is. Like, I think that everybody understands that, you know,
my hope is that somehow we can do it natively almost where it won't be annoying. It just is. Yeah. Like, it'll slip into their lives. I mean, and not that, you know, all of a sudden a bunch of pre-rolls and, or subscriptions or whatever. Like, I have no idea what this looks like at this point, but yeah, I don't believe that, making money and good content and annoying people have to be all part of the same thing, right?
Right.
Like, that, why do you have to annoy people to figure this out? Like, I feel honestly that Beach Grit's readership is, for sure, it's smaller than Stabs and smaller than, you know, Surf Lines and smaller than Surfers and whatever.
Smaller than the inertia,
but I think Beach Grit readership is 15 times more valuable. The inertia is getting bullshit Huffington Post people to come on and read some weird surf story because it's about a whale who got stuck in the Ventura Harbor. They have nothing to do with the culture. They have nothing to do with any of it. And I mean, I think Zach Weisberg and the inertia are on the, that's what was, right? That is the recent past, which I don't think he knows that yet, which is, clicks don't mean shit anymore, right? Like, the inertia could be getting 2.8 million clicks a day. Who cares? None of those people are doing anything with it. None of those people are sticking around. It's all just coming into their Facebook feed, and they're clicking, maybe if they do click, they're clicking on it because it's some weird off thing, which, you know, all the inertia titles are geared toward, this video of this whale will shock you, or, you know, and, you know, Beach Grit is obviously going after the TMZ kind of hyperbole always. But I always feel we deliver on our clickbait, but the inertia stuff is, nobody's sitting around, nobody's surfing, nobody's doing anything. The Beach Grit community, I think, is a core surf community. and nobody but nobody is going after the core core surfer anymore in order to deliver him anything, right? And the core core surfer still wants stuff, still needs stuff, still needs, like, it's not like it's this market that's, you know, I mean, I don't know. I think it's a real tough market just because they've been abused for years and years and years of that's not what I am. They see the ads, they get delivered the content, all of it. And, you know, I feel that way. I feel that's not.
Look, if for the beat, for the inertia, 2 million, let's say they get 2 million clicks a month or 2 million fans a month. Let's call them fans. If they can't convert those fans into sales for their advertisers, then it's worthless. And I don't know that the advertisers can track that fully. Whereas if Beach Grit has 1,000 true fans, it's an article written by a guy named Kevin Kelly. You could 1,000 true fans is all you need.
Yeah.
And okay, so what do you do with that 1,000 true fans? If you can mobilize them to spend $100 each a year, well, that's $100,000 that you have. Well, you already have more than that. You know, the numbers already are there. You can mobilize them a lot more effectively than I think bigger companies are that have much larger followers.
I mean, I just think that across the entire internet plane, numbers don't mean anything anymore. Like, who are these people, right? Where, again, I know Beach Grit people. Beach Grit is people. It's not numbers. Derek and I are not going after you know, the giant, let's spray this on the Huffington Post and get as many numbers as we can. That'd be great, you know, if we could get, when Derek and I get big days on Beach Grit, that's awesome. But, like, I love our people, and I want to add more people to that, more real people who are coming and engaging with the site because it's enjoyable.
Totally. I totally agree. Speaking of people, feedback from last episode, everybody's saying that their hair looks phenomenal.
They shouldn't wash.
We've got people not washing their hair because we talked about it on
the air. Okay, it's amazing. And you are all credit for that, because I was still a washer at that point at our last conversation. I mean, you know, once every 3 months. Once every 3 months,
right,
exactly.
Right,
but
right.
I would categorize myself as a washer if I washed at all.
We call you washers.
Sure. Yeah. The unwashers. Yeah, so
when we go to our meetings every year.
Yeah, you damn washers.
Yeah,
the washers. But yeah, brilliant. I'm so glad. People will be so happy.
Dude, people literally have messaged me. I've gotten DMs on Instagram. I've gotten emails. People are like, hey, man, I haven't washed my hair since I listened to that.
Yeah.
It honestly looks better than it's ever
for
looked.
Sure. You just
How
have to get I mean, I thought you did a brilliant job of walking people through the awkward stage where you got to go through the couple days of grease.
5 days.
Sure. And if you're in near the ocean and you can surf for those 5 days, then you won't even notice it. I mean, your hair will look ratty, but once you're through those 5 days, you're gold.
Equilibrium.
Yeah.
It hits that equilibrium.
No, you're totally gold.
So I got another email from a longtime listener. He said, dude, I love you guys together. Ask Chaz if it's okay for a 35-year-old dad to skateboard. My boy is 4 and has a scooter. It reignited my urge to skate, and now we spend some quality time together in the front yard nearly every night doing circles on the driveway. I have both a Carver cruiser board and a proper skate deck, and I'll occasionally ollie and work on landing clean kickflips. Many times I'd rather skate than surf. However, I feel like a total douche because of my age.
So here's what I think about that. I think kids cancel any kind of cool guy thing out, right? Where if you're having fun with your kid doing something, if you guys are, I mean, you could be, I don't know, riding a toboggan in your driveway together. Like, any kind of action-y fun thing like that is brilliant. And I think pushing your kids to something because you think it's cool, if they're not having fun with it, is pointless. I think that, you know, like, you see scooters at the skate park, right?
Yeah,
and all the skate kids hate the scooters and blah, 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 blah. If your kid wants to go rip a stinking scooter at the skate park, then, like, I would gladly get on a Razor 2 and go, like, flip it around and stuff. Like, because at 35, who cares?
Yeah.
And that's the big bonus of being 35 is who cares? As long as you're having fun, the more fun you're having and the more who cares you're giving, then the better off you are, unless you're picking up a sup. And if your kid wants to sup, then it's no.
Then you abandon your child.
Exactly.
You drop him off at the orphanage.
You leave him on the beach with another supper and say, hey, I think you lost your kid.
Had a gnarly situation this morning at Cardiff.
With a supper?
Yeah. You know Devin Howard?
Yeah. I don't know him, but I know the name.
Devin Howard.
He's the guy that writes for... he's a writer? No.
I'm thinking
Jake Howard.
Well, yeah, you're thinking of Jake Howard. Devin Howard was editor-in-chief at Longboard Magazine.
Okay.
He writes for Surfer's Journal occasionally,
okay.
But he's like this... He's always around. He's a San Diego guy. Okay. But anyway, he took off on a left, and like this SUPer had caught it from like way
deeper. Do you call them SUPers?
Suppers? I don't know. Yeah, I call them both.
I think, yeah, okay.
SUP, sup.
Okay, I'm straight sup at this point.
Are you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, the guy caught it from way deeper, but like...
faded.
Yeah, like faded left, and like it, where the wave was breaking is where Devin took off. And then Devin like started to kind of go back and do a top turn backhand, and the SU pier was bottom turning, and they collided when Devin was coming down the SU pier.
That's brilliant to witness.
And the stand-up paddler grabbed him by the neck, like as they were going down, Devin has scratch marks on his neck, and then hit him in the face with the paddle.
What?
Like the handle of the paddle in his face. He's got a nose, like it's all bruised right by his nose under his eye. And Devin's like, I don't know if the guy actually hit me in the face intentionally with the paddle. And it's a guy that he knows, like it's a guy that's out there all the time. And they came up arguing, and people kind of broke it up. But the guy's a complete asshole and is like, this is why everybody hates you, Devin. And Devin's like, what are you talking about? You're the guy everybody hates. And Devin told me that Joel Tudor punched that guy in the face previously.
That makes me love Joel Tudor even more.
I know. Like, that guy's just a nuisance out there. And, like, I don't want to say his name, but people probably know who I'm talking about, who surf Cardiff all the time. And, yeah, so Devin got out of the water. Devin had this 10-6 skip fry that he was riding, dinged the side of it. Like, gnarly.
See, okay, I have a real problem with fades in general, to be honest.
I do, too.
If I see somebody fading, like anything, you know, any sup, any longboard, if you're going to fade one way, then you're going that way as far as I'm concerned, and I'm going. Mm-hmm. If I see you fade, to me, the fade is erases the priority rule on a wave, and you're done. Like, and it should be all the listeners out there should... you should just paddle on guys fading. I do. I make it a rule. If I see the second I see a guy fade, I paddle even if I don't want the wave. Just to teach him a lesson.
Spoken like a true shortboarder, dude.
But I hate the fade. You
don't
know because
you're a shortboarder. If you were riding that 10-6 glider that Devin was riding, you'd figure out the fade.
Doesn't matter. Fading feels nice. But if you like, I get that. I get that it's a nice thing to do. But if you fade, then you're begging for your wave to be shared. Is all I'm saying. Like, just because you're riding something that's 18 feet long doesn't mean that you get, like, 1 mile worth of wave. Yeah. Like, oh, I'm thinking about going this way. Nah, I'm going to just do it, go this way. Like, no. Like, once you go one way, and I honestly think surf rules, surf etiquette should be rewritten to erase the fade, where rules are, once you go one way, you're going that way. If you want to go the other way, then you are more than welcome to share your wave.
I like it. I actually think, especially for a guy riding a board that big, there's room on the wave for more than
of course
one person,
and because you're going to be going so slow already. I mean, even on a longboard, right? Like the fadey longboarder, if there's a shortboarder that drops in on you, he's going to be pumping down the line, whatever. Totally. Like maybe you don't want to watch him do that, and that, like, you know, wrecks your vibe and, you know, puts a wake in your wave or whatever. But sorry, you faded. I loathe beyond anything. And again, anytime I'm out at a wave where longboarders are on, I will paddle for every wave I can and get ready to drop in. And if I see them fade, gladly do it. Yeah. I'm going 100%. And then come up with, whoa, I thought you were going left, bro.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Well, you just said that makes you love Joel Tudor even more. Let's do a Joel Tudor conversation.
Oh, I love Joel Tudor.
Do you really?
I think Joel Tudor probably feels that Beach Crit doesn't love him. I love, and Beach Crit loves Joel Tudor like the media loves Donald Trump.
Oh.
In that...
Well, that's not very complimentary then.
No, because look at everybody's numbers. New York Times subscriptions are through the roof.
Okay.
Everybody's numbers are bananas.
Yeah.
Because of... Without Donald Trump, it would be the failing New York Times and blah-de-blah-de-blah, right? Donald Trump keeps these people relevant. I've never met Joel. I would like to meet him. Joel, I would like to meet you. You can armbar me all you want. But... Yeah, Joel to me is brilliant because it feels like he doesn't care and he just says stuff, and his stuff that he says is hypocritical and funny just to bash.
Is he an asshole?
I've never met him.
I mean I've never met him either, but I think he is. Like what's going on with Joel? Like, at once he is this cruisy longboarder who's into like I guess jujitsu isn't calming. I was thinking more yoga, but he seems like a guy who's like pretty zen in a sense.
Have you heard the story of when Danny Fuller kicked his ass on the beach
no.
in Hawaii?
No. Break it down.
I mean, I don't know. It might be a straight rumor, but
give me the most embellished version you have.
The version that I have is that Danny Fuller kicked Joel Tudor's ass. Joel Tudor had been training jiu-jitsu and was a jiu-jitsu master, and Danny Fuller kicked his ass on the beach in, I think, in the North Shore is the version I have. And then that made Joel go like 10 times more in jiu-jitsu.
I remember hearing a story that's why he got into jiu-jitsu, because he got beat up. But I didn't know it was Fuller.
Yeah,
was
responsible. Danny Fuller is what I heard. Again, maybe it's not true.
Well, I just feel like Joel at once is like this cruisy longboarder, but then I've heard people who have done business with him and other stuff, and it's like, and then that story that Devin mentioned about Joel punching the dude in the face, which apparently that guy had it coming,
sure,
I guess.
Sure, that's nice, see, right? Joel's the White Knight in that story.
Exactly. But I just, with his Instagram, basically, is where I'm getting a lot of this information from as well, is he has a lot of vitriol on Instagram,
sure.
Like more vitriol than I would think from the guy who's like the cruisy longboarder.
But maybe Joel just doesn't care. I mean,
maybe
Joel is
yeah.
just, is again, talking about the Donald Trump of surf media. Maybe Joel has a funny opinion, like a funny late night opinion, throws it up and doesn't erase it and lets people tee off. And then, you know, Beach Grip puts it up or whatever, whoever puts it up. And Joel just like, yeah, whatever. Here's my next,
interestingly,
opinion.
It's never funny. And it's always, it just feels angry. Like I can sense that he is feeling, he's an angry dude.
But what if he's not? What if
what
if he's, the funny thing to him is making all these people think that he's an angry dude. Again,
maybe, yeah.
I've never met Joel.
Me neither.
So I don't
know.
It's
all speculation.
All pure speculation. But part of me wonders if he's totally in on the joke, right? If he thinks, I'm going to get everybody wound up by saying the guy who is just concussed and crying is a pussy.
Yeah.
And just put it out there and just let them all go.
Well, we're sitting probably 5 miles from where he's sitting now.
Sure,
we could have this call. I've reached out to him a number of times, and he just never returns any of my.
I don't have any friend who has a friend who has. Oh, so you are my friend who has a contact.
Yeah, Devin's good buddies with him.
Okay,
Devin
so could hook it up. Okay. I'll ask. I'm going to go out. Like last time, it was Albie.
Yeah.
Well, not last time, but a few times ago. This time, I'll go after Joel and see if I can get him to. I mean, maybe Joel might be exceedingly angry at Beach Grit.
Maybe. Even better. Maybe then he'll actually participate.
Sure, he has every right to be. But there's no, like, I just love Joel for making news. And to me, Joel's always the one making the news, right?
Well, the reason why I brought him up, obviously, is because you guys just did a couple of stories on him. He took to Instagram to rail against the WSL for bringing on beer sponsors.
Yep.
Corona for the J-Bay Open. I forget who else. Jose Cuervo, I think, is involved.
Was there
sponsoring?
Did he go there too? I just remember is there a Jose Cuervo sponsor?
I think Jose Cuervo is sponsoring something with the WSL.
I would love to be at that event.
But so Joel took to Instagram to be like, you know, alcohol is so damaging and like the WSL should not be partnering with them. But Joel even states in that post, like, he's a huge proponent of marijuana.
Sure, sure.
And that's why I partner with Weed Maps, is because marijuana has vastly improved my life in these various ways and blah, 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 blah. So, obviously people have a lot of thoughts on whether Joel's right or wrong or whatever. And I honestly think Joel's not wrong. He just seems really angry in the way that he's expressing it. I don't really, you and I already talked about Joel. I'm curious to actually hear your personal thoughts on WSL partnering with alcohol companies and then also weed.
I mean, I honestly think the WSL should partner with a cocaine sponsorship if they could. If they could partner with the Medellin cartel, then that would be the best of all.
Hold on. I'm feeling a title for a book.
Yeah.
Cocaine and Surfing.
That's
a love story.
That's the one. Outside of that, though, I mean, I think, come on, let's stop pretending surfing is, it's somewhere, I think Sophie Goldschmidt said it best, that surfing is the nexus, and I am paraphrasing, between lifestyle and sport, right? Where it's somewhere in between lifestyle and sport. And so to pretend that, you know, surfers don't booze and that surfers don't smoke weed is silly. And so I think the WSL should partner with both. And I guess as to what Joel was saying, I think some people are just boozy people and some people are weedy people. And both are totally awesome, I think.
So let's have a personal conversation right now for listeners. I've come to the – as I'm super into wine. I actually just launched a wine podcast.
I saw.
Did you? So
– That's a good name. What's it
The
called?
Double D Wine
Double
Show.
Double D, yeah.
It's because it's me and my buddy Dave.
Yeah,
so Dave
really
and David.
Good.
Thanks. I'm really proud of that. I've put more branding into that than I have Surf Splendor that I've been doing for 4 years.
How did you get the model to pose for the Double D?
Just asked her. Do you like that photo?
Yeah.
My mom was not a huge fan.
That's amazing.
My mom's also not a huge fan of your advice that you gave me.
Oh, which was?
Get married
early, often.
Oh,
yeah,
and get
a bunch
of tattoos.
Early and often.
So anyway, so I'm personal conversation. Alcohol. It's like, I'm a huge fan, obviously.
Sure, sure.
Like, I'm super into wine, and, like, I also drink hard alcohol and occasional beers and stuff. But I do recognize that I don't think there's a lot of benefit to it. Like,
No, it's bad.
It's very bad for
That's
me.
Bad
there's
for
definitely no health benefits.
Okay, wait, though. Did you see the new RT, Russia Today, Russia's state mouthpiece?
No.
They just did a thing that said, and I think it was for people over 80. It was hard to discern what it was about.
Yeah.
But people who drink, I think it was like 5 basically vodka drinks a day. And again, I think it was like over 80, are way less prone to dementia than their non hard drinking counterparts. I'll find the story. I'll send
it
to you.
Science?
It's RT science. I'll send you the story. I'll send you the article. Yeah.
Well, I just feel like I could also make an argument for how it's made me more intellectually interesting and, like, stimulated
sure, sure.
my personal relationships and all these sort of things. But in reality, I know, like, it doesn't
–
it yeah, just – I think it's a deficit in my life.
Do you think about your liver sometimes? Do you
No.
wonder how your liver looks?
I don't, because I'm too young to really have Fair. That kind of foresight.
Okay.
But I'm now – I'm also old enough to have – the foresight that I'm talking about, which is I don't think there's health benefits, but I hear Joel loud and clear where it's like, well, marijuana actually has proven scientific benefit
sure, sure.
for these various things. And then I also look at people like, I mean, I mentioned the LSD situation, like Timothy Leary's work on that. And there's now like John Hopkins University doing testing with psilocybin on PTSD and things like that, where they're just taking micro doses of it, very directly targeted at specific disorders, and it's effectively treating them with no side effect because you're doing this kind of micro dosing situation. So it's like I look at those things and I'm like, well, I'm not actually doing any of those drugs, but I have a feeling that they're actually a better alternative
oh, yeah.
to the one that I am doing, which is alcohol.
100%. I think booze is like awful, but that's my dame. And I'm totally going
You're
down.
Okay with it.
Oh, yeah. I'm going down with that ship for sure.
Okay.
But I think 100% that Joel's right in what he says about marijuana. 100%. Like, I think that it was hypocritical, obviously, that Pacifico sponsored Duct Tape Invitational 2 years ago and that Corona, he got, you know, got on Instagram and got pissy at the WSL for having a Corona sponsor. That was just utterly bad form, Joel.
Yeah.
I want to be friends. I want you to armbar me. But bad form
yeah.
on the utter hypocrisy.
Right.
But Joel's also, I think, 100% right in that weed actually or marijuana has health benefits and is not, you know, necessarily bad for you depending on what you're doing and possibly good for you.
Right.
Where that booze and definitely beer is only bad for you. Vodka sponsor, once you come on board, then I will...
We'll curate the content.
Totally curate and claim or, yeah... Vodka might be good for you.
We're gonna need a coconut water sponsor.
Sure, to go alongside.
Vodka.
To go alongside. But anyway, yeah, I think weed is. I think weed and all that are not all that. But I think I don't know about LSD. Weed for sure. I feel the CBDs and the CBD whatever the other
yeah.
things are and the blah blah blah.
We're obviously experts.
Yeah.
So we should
100%
devote a whole podcast to this 100%. Drug talk.
100%. But yeah, booze bad. Marijuana maybe good.
Okay. Sure so. Another listener asked me to ask you, what's the most fashionable cigarette of summer?
Oh, man. I don't smoke anymore.
I know. See, I think people yeah. don't know that.
Oh, yeah. I know. Every branding, every bit of Chaz Smith branding is cigarette. And I did that even after I smoked, stopped smoking, just because I loathe taking a picture. And so it was a really easy way to cover my face while taking a picture. But I'm going to say the most fashionable cigarette of summer is the Virginia Slim.
Really?
The super skinny ciggy?
My grandma used to smoke those.
Of course she did.
Yeah.
And the super skinny ciggy in summer is, I think, a good look on a man because it says, I'm in my beach grit trunks that are basically a Speedo.
Yeah.
And I'm smoking a lady cigarette. And I am the baddest dude on this beach.
All right.
I think when you don't care that much, you're gold.
Well, you answered listeners' inquiring minds wanted to know. So thank you for that. I wanted to actually finish the conversation that one listener asking about a skateboard, about riding a skateboard with his kid. I want to discuss the 540 versus the 360. Chris Cote, who we know and love, I would consider Chris a personal acquaintance. Not a friend, but an acquaintance. So I could have this conversation with Chris, but that would be a little too normal. And I would like to instead just throw stones across the podcast platform because he's doing his own podcast too.
It'd be boring.
Totally.
How's he doing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I'd have to ask him. Have you listened to it?
I have.
Yeah? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. I love the art. Didn't Sketchy Tank do the art?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They did that years and years ago.
Really?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I used it. My very first episode ever was with Chris.
And
I
that
used
art.
That on episode one.
Brilliant art.
Four years ago.
What I love most about Chris Cote is that he has wedged himself into action sports. I think in the way that I guess I have too. But Chris has wedged cross-platform. Like, before I came here, I was just listening to Chris Cote call the skate competition at the U.S. Open. And so the fact that Chris can call skate and surf, and I don't know why Chris isn't calling snowboard. But yeah, Chris Cote as action sportsman is brilliant.
So his podcast is Monday Mass. It's Mass Action Sports Show. And so it is surf, skate, and snow. The point that I'm going to pick apart with Chris, without him here to defend himself, is he calls every full rotation air a 540.
Yeah.
So there's a reason why he's doing it, and it's because he knows more about comes from the skate background. So I've always just kind of acquiesced to Chris and be like, well, if he calls it a 540, then it's a 540 because he knows skate and I don't, and a lot of these things that we're doing in surfing come from skate. But I think there's also just math. You know,
Chris is wrong. Chris, I feel, is wrong.
I feel he's wrong, dude.
I've sat down with skateboarders before and showed them what Chris calls 540 airs, and they're saying, "What are you talking about? Look at the nose. Look at the nose of the surfboard. Let's pretend the wave is a ramp. Look at the nose. It's facing this way. Guy goes up. He's coming back around. The nose is facing the same way. That's 360.
So even the skaters say it's a 360.
Yes.
So I'm going to pick one particular wave so that we're not just talking in platitudes here.
Sure.
One particular wave. We all saw it, but I will post it. SurfSplendorPodcast.com. Griffin Colapinto in a warm-up session at the U.S. Open. Everybody saw the air. Matt Biolas posted it on Instagram. A bunch of people posted it. Griffin does this insanely huge lofty boost. But if you watch where his nose is pointing when he takes off and then where it is when he lands back on the wave – or touches down on water, he does 360 degrees of rotation mathematically.
Yes.
Right? 360 degrees from a math standpoint, undeniable. Chris called that exact wave a 540 no less than three times.
Was there slip on the tail? So when Colapinto came down, did he like go fakie for a minute and then spin out of it?
No.
Yeah.
He landed precisely with the nose pointing the same direction that he launched from.
Sure.
Now, I'd have to talk to Chris about this. There was a bit of inversion in the rotation. So, but the fact that he's inverted, I don't know if maybe they're kind of trying to add degrees to that. I have no idea. But it's like, Chris, you can't call everything a 540, dude.
To me, like, I've always been real confused about it. And then I sat down with Jagger Eaton, was the kid, I can say now, who was skating in the U.S. I mean, he was skating in the event that Chris was calling, right? He's a total phenomenal, next level preternatural skateboarder. But I would show him the stuff, and he was like, what are you talking about? Just watch the nose of the board. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's up, and it's down, and it's pointing the same way. It's 360.
All right, like, Chris. Shots fired, dude.
Yeah, Chris. Mass.
Take to mass and tell us that we're wrong, dude.
Chris.
We'll be listening.
Yeah.
Chris Cote.
For sure. Jeez. Mass.
All right, so last time I was talking about like, couple of things we got to catch up from last time. We need a shoe Instagram.
Oh yeah.
Dude, you're not wearing fancy shoes today.
I meant to. This is a toss out to one of my favorite people on earth, Paul Rodriguez. I got these shoes before they were actually released. How many Nikes have you had before you could buy them?
Never. Not one.
Oh, yeah. See? So I got these. This is my first pair, which is the P-Rod. I do believe it's the 10. It might be the 13. I can't remember. No, 10. I think. Maybe 9. Something. But it's the Paul Rodriguez. His skate shoe. And this is, I think, only Kobe and Michael Jordan have had 10 shoes. And now Paul Rodriguez, skateboarder, has had 10 shoes.
How about that?
Yeah. It's brilliant.
It's a P-Rod, dude.
P-Rod is amazing. Yeah, he's amazing. And it's a great shoe. That's the problem, is I put it on because this is what I was wearing. And then thought, oh, no. But then I thought, no, this is what I was wearing. So I'm going. Yeah.
So how important is it that they're untied? The laces are loose.
And I never tie my shoes.
Oh, okay.
Then you'll never once see me tie my shoes.
Okay. So do you have to get like a half a size smaller so that they're snug?
Nope.
They just don't fall off untied?
Yeah, never. Never. Huh. Yeah.
You're an anomaly, dude.
What? I think tying is like washing your hair these days. I think shoes are made such where they just fit on your feet. And tying doesn't... I mean, you could lose the laces on all your shoes. You should try it.
Huh. Okay.
And it would mean nothing. I think shoes have slimmed down, like sizing, you know, not the 10 now. Oh, yeah. The 10 now is better and more accurate than the 10 then.
I have a new pair of shoes, and it's super snug to get my foot in, so I'm going to take the laces off.
What kind of shoes are they?
I don't think you'll know them. They're not that hip. The brand's called Greats. They're like direct.
Oh, yeah. I know Greats, of course. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're rad.
So it's a good leather. It's a good leather proper shoe. What is the version of Greats are they? I mean, what do they represent?
Rosen is the model.
But what is it, a Stan Smith or what are they? Because Greats just rip shoes off, right?
Oh, I have no idea.
Oh, that's the whole point of Greats, is they take great shoes. That's why it's called Greats.
Oh.
And they do a, you know, another version of it.
Got it.
But it's the same thing. So it's an iconic shoe that you're wearing. It's either a Stan Smith or a Jordan or something that Greats is taking and redoing it, right? I mean, they're not getting sued, but it's a great shoe. That's why.
Okay.
From one of the greats.
Fascinating.
Yeah. So it's coming from an iconic shoe. Your outline.
Yeah. The design I love, and it's just super simple and they're inexpensive. They're like direct to consume. You just buy it on their website, whatever. But they're a little snug, and I've been a little miffed about it, so I'm going to take off the laces.
Take off the laces, or just undo the laces. Yeah, I haven't tied my shoes in maybe, like 10 years now.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow. Okay, so listeners, no more washing your hair, no more tying your shoes. Somebody actually emailed, and they're like, how often do you wash your jeans?
Oh, okay. I mean, this is a great question. If you have raw denim, the theory is never, or what they say is never. The truth is, the longer you go, the more patinaed they get. And so I had a pair of APC raw denim that I think I washed after 3 years. And they came out of that first wash so incredibly beautiful. And then, you know, I wore them. Once you wash them once, then you're kind of stuck. If it's raw denim, you're stuck washing them. So I wore them another couple months, and they started stinking. So I had to wash them again and blah, 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 and then the crotch ripped.
What's APC?
APC is a beautiful French raw denim brand.
Is it short for something?
Something in French.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like a French rock and roll guy started a jean company. It's amazing. APC is amazing jean.
So,
if it's raw, you
what does raw mean? I don't even know what that is.
Raw denim?
Yeah.
Oh, you don't?
Come on, Chaz.
Oh,
dude, I don't know anything.
Raw denim is a thing.
Start from the beginning, dude.
Raw denim is a thing. Raw denim is, I have no idea what it means. But raw denim is a thing, and if you buy your raw denim jeans, that's a thing. If you buy normal jeans, like, are you in jeans right now?
These are James Purse, dude.
Oh, yeah. So those are not jeans.
If
you buy a jean with, like, stretchy material in it or stuff or something, that's not raw, you know, obviously raw. And then you wash them, I would imagine.
Oh, so whatever. Raw denim meaning 100%
denim. 100% denim.
Got it.
It's 100% cotton, you know, is denim. And those, yeah, again, I've gone 3 years without washing. They're horrible. It's like the stiff 501s.
Yeah, yeah.
That's raw denim. The shrink-to-fit thing... I don't know with Levi, but that theoretically shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
But like, you know, the APCs I got, They looked awful for 1 year. That's the thing about them. That's the beautiful thing, is you have to muscle out 1 or 2 years of wearing a bad pant till you can get to the wash point. And then once you wash them, like every crease they have on them, once you wash them,
becomes a line.
Exactly. And it's you, though. It's the way you move. It's a story for you. And as
we're learning a lot.
Crappy as that sounds. Yeah. Like you create. So this, your gene then is 100% you. It's not manufactured. It wasn't. Yeah.
So, well, okay. So last time I did this segment and I pitched it as like wayward quandaries of like, I'm going through these things in life and like I need you to give me advice on them. I'm rebranding that segment. Just, it's going to be called Barrel or Nah.
Sure. Great.
Based off your Instagram.
Better.
Barrel means it's the raddest thing in the world.
Sure.
Nah means nah, man.
Yeah.
So Barrel or Nah. I've got four categories. You tell me if it's Barrel or Nah. Tide watches.
Not, because I've never had one that worked. Have you?
I've never even tried to buy one because I don't care about the tide.
Sure. I don't care about the tide at all either.
At all, dude.
No.
At all.
No.
I'll go surfing and somebody's like, oh, is the tide coming up? And I'm like, I don't know, dude. I had 1 hour to surf before work or after work or between things. Like, I'm just going to surf. I don't care.
100%. Yeah. Like, yeah, I think tide watches are a complete no.
Big time no, dude.
Unless.
And is there any fashionable one?
No. Maybe Nixon does one. I have no idea. But I would imagine if you're like, I would say, yeah, I guess if you're in New York and you work in an office, okay. I will say a maybe Barrel. If you are some Midwestern place with Tide Watch, then I would say Barrel, because then when your babe coworker says, why is your watch so big and have those waves on it? You can say, oh, I was just checking the surf.
Because I Barrel.
Yeah, because I go surf like it's sick sometimes.
Exactly.
I go. I need to know. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, as a fashion, right. if you're looking to attract girls, then yes,
we do have listeners in the Midwest.
Sure, of course.
So
yeah,
they're all on that right now.
No, you should all go
and
buy.
Look for the Nixon
the
version.
Barrel watch. Yeah.
I guess we already covered this, but cigarettes, Barrel or not?
Oh yeah, no,
nah. So why did you quit? Is the question?
I mean, I quit because I was having a daughter, and I thought there's no way I'll be able to look my daughter in the eye when she's 15 and say, honey, Dad's dying because he was looking pretty cool.
I mean, cigarettes, he's dying with yellow teeth.
Yeah, cigarettes are undeniably awful for you. So I got more addicted, to be honest, to be quite frank, on Nicorette than I ever was on cigarettes. Nicorette is the greatest thing ever. Even if you don't smoke, you should go chew Nicorette.
Is it bad for you?
It's awful for you.
Oh,
I think. I don't know. It's just weird chemicals and nicotine, right?
Okay.
And so it was harder for me to kick Nicorette than it was to kick cigarettes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's like heroin addicts who go and get on methadone.
Like yeah, exactly.
And then, yeah, it's like methadone.
You can't get off the artificial thing. Yeah. So, yeah, but Nicorette, if you're smoking right now and thinking about quitting, because I would imagine at some level Nicorette is better for you than cigarettes, it'll totally, to you cigarette smokers who are wanting to quit, it'll totally gross you. It'll make you puke for the first three chews, like washing your hair or not washing your hair or not washing your jeans, but it'll make you puke for the first three chews. After that, you'll think, where have you been all my life? And okay, You'll never want another cigarette.
All right. Well, that's before they quit. They're going to have to get onto Virginia Slims for a few weeks until the end of summer.
You totally.
And then Nicorette.
You hit the Virginia Slims and then go Nicorette.
Right.
Nicorette, I'll tell you the weird thing about Nicorette. Do you chew gum?
No.
Okay. You don't chew any gum ever?
I really don't.
Like,
my only vice is wine, really.
When you have a piece of gum, like the flavor runs out, I reckon between 30 minutes max, right?
Yes, I'm familiar with gum.
Sure. So 30 minutes, you're done with flavor at your outside.
Oh, totally.
Nicorette, the flavor of a piece will last for 4 hours.
No way.
And it's because the point is not flavor. It's so they have two different, Nicorette, they have like 2 milligram, 4 milligram. 4 milligram, I think, will last for 3 hours. The flavor will last the entire time plus. Because the whole point is just, and yeah, you're not chewing, you're packing it. Like you chew and then you stick it down there and it's just your body's just soaking up the nicotine, right?
Dude, I was at the bar the other day.
Yeah.
I saw somebody stuffing what I thought was a piece of gum in their lip.
That's what it is.
So that's what it is.
You're not supposed to chew it. You chew it to activate the nicotine. So the rules for Nicorette are you chew it and then you stick it in your lower lip because it's just absorbing the – and then when you stop feeling the buzz, you chew it again for a couple chews and you pack it again. And you could do that for 4 hours. And so – and it tastes good. And so when I, got into Nicorette, I was like, this is genius. You can be having a nicotine buzz basically around the clock. Which is why you'll get addicted, because you're just – so 4 hours is up. You pop another piece, and then you're on for another 4 hours.
That's amazing.
You just basically chew it all day.
Dude, I had no idea what that guy was doing, and I thought he was a weirdo.
Anybody who chews, obviously. Like in movies, when they're chewing nicotine gum, they'll chew it. That's not what you do. You chew and you pack.
Okay. Good to know.
Yeah.
Barrel or nah?
Yeah.
Asymmetrical surfboards.
Have you ever ridden one?
I do. Yeah. I have a few.
Is it fun? I've never ridden one.
Okay. So I'm going to answer barrel or not.
Exactly.
I say barrel.
What's the difference between asymmetrical when you're actually riding? Okay. My question is, what if you go the other way of the way that it's the asymmetrical doesn't go, right?
That is a misnomer. You are looking at it wrong. Or whoever explained it to you explained it to you wrong.
Nobody's ever explained it. I just look at it and think, okay, this is supposed to go one way on the way,
that's
right?
Incorrect.
This is on my forehead.
That's not true. No, it goes left and right, either direction.
How does it fit the wave then?
I'll explain it.
Okay.
So, look down at your foot. Is your foot symmetrical?
No.
Look at a wave. Is a wave symmetrical?
Yes.
No, it's not. A wave is not symmetrical. Any water never traverses the board symmetrically at any moment, at any time. Nothing that's happening is symmetrical. So there's zero reason why the board itself should be symmetrical. More important than the wave is your foot. So your foot standing on the board, your toes have the ability to leverage, meaning pull, and your heels have and push, but your heels don't have the ability to leverage so much. They have the ability to push, and they're heavier. The point of the kind of center point of your foot isn't actually in the center because there's more weight on your heels than there is on your toes. So the center point of where your weight is distributed isn't in the middle of your foot. It's closer to your heels. So you take those things into account to make the toe side of your board like more longer, like the stringer is actually pulled closer to your heels. So there's a longer distance of foam in terms of width from the stringer to the rail on your toe side, but it's narrow. It's thinner.
So why don't they just brand them regular goofy boards?
They could. Yeah, they should.
They should.
Yeah,
because then I would buy one.
Yes.
I've always thought that an asymmetrical board up until this moment was for somebody who wanted to go on their forehand.
Not true. So I'm a regular footed surfer. I have three, I think, actually asymmetrical boards. I can go right or left on them, but a goofy footer couldn't ride the board.
Who's your ASIM shapers?
I've gotten them from Donald Brink, who's a San Clemente shaper. Matt Parker at Album Surfboards. And he does non-asymmetrical. He does symmetrical boards as well, but he does do asymmetrical boards, and he's done a number for Josh Kerr recently.
I mean, finish up, but I have one more question.
So the answer is the board is designed for your foot, but it's not – I will say to you, like, it's impossible to say to the shaper, like, hey, Matt Parker – shape a asymmetrical board, shape a 5'11" shortboard thruster, an asymmetrical version and then a symmetrical version, and I'm going to take those things out tomorrow and ride both of them and tell you the differences between the two. It's a very difficult study to do.
Why don't you think that pros would all be riding asymmetrical then?
You know how slow the surf world is to adapt to change.
Do you think they will be?
I think I don't know. I think that they will be experimenting with them and
in competition.
Yeah. They already have been. A couple of years ago, Josh Kerr rode asymmetrical boards at Chopu. shaped by Rusty. Because Chopu, it's like, I just need the heel side to be
thicker.
Like, yeah, I could do this. I just need to get into this line. And so there was a lot less variables to manage for.
Wait, at Chopu, if you're Josh Kerr, say, he's regular, right?
Yeah.
Okay, would his, he's dropping, would his heel side be thinner or thicker?
Thicker.
Thicker.
Why for the weight of your heels.
Okay.
There's probably a sharp edge on the rail.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So thicker with a sharp edge.
Yeah.
And your toe side would be thinner and rounded. Does it matter?
It's thinner in terms of, again, obviously foam. Thickness, but wider from the stringer to the actual
rail.
Why
wouldn't you? I'm glad you brought up Chopu because this would be the perfect example. Nobody in history has ever gone right on Chopu. You're only going
that's
left.
Not true, actually. Tommy Whitaker got a 10
going
on a
right
at Chopu. I think it was against Slater.
Can you post it?
No, I've looked for it. I watched it live on the internet. It was like when the internet first started streaming surfing.
That's brilliant.
I was
to know.
Tripping. Tommy Witz, dude.
Tommy
somebody
Witz.
Needs to. We'll reach out maybe to Warshaw or somebody. Somebody had to know, be able to validate this.
Tommy Witz went right at Chopu, got a barrel.
Yeah.
Came out
10. I think it was against Kelly.
I mean, this is an amazing moment in surf history, right?
Yeah. We need to ask either Warshaw or Joe Terpel or Dave Stanfield or somebody. I witnessed it, but I need validation.
This is amazing. I mean,
all right, we'll dig it up.
Okay.
We'll dig it up.
Okay. But so anyway, Chopu would be the perfect place for if asymmetrical boards actually meant something.
To test it.
Sure, because you're never going right, except if you're Tommy Woods.
Right.
But, yeah.
And it's also to do with the rail line. Like, one rail is longer than the other rail. So, and the thing is, the ones that Josh Kerr rode, you couldn't tell they were asymmetrical by looking at them. They looked symmetrical, but there was design.
Thickness and.
Yeah.
I mean, why wouldn't you just have, like, a super long, fat left rail and a super thin.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Do you think it's because. How did Josh do on those boards?
I don't remember, actually. And I just think that it's the surf world is super slow to adapt to change. Look at Stu Kennedy, what he did at Snapper a year or two ago on the Slater Designs board, the Sci-Fi.
With the Sci-Fi, yeah.
Well, did everybody on tour start riding shorter boards that were flat, planing hulls with a bunch of channels in them? No, nobody did except Kelly. So it's... You know, it just takes a long time for change to take place, and nobody's willing to risk it when World Tour heats are on the line.
Is that, I mean, is the future, do you think, sorry to belabor the barrel no, but is the future asymmetrical?
Okay. I keep kind of hedging my guesses. I'm going to say yes.
The future, so.
I think it is.
In
Slater, I remember Slater being interviewed in the U.S. Open 3 or 4 years ago, and somebody asked him, I think it was GT. From Von Zipper.
Sure.
Was like, hey man, what's the future of surfboards look like for you? And he goes, I think it looks asymmetrical. Slater said it.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. And he was, and then he mentioned Tomo, and like, this was prior to Slater Designs or any of that, but he did mention Tomo, and he's like, he's doing some really interesting things. Stewie Kennedy's riding them. Those boards look incredible. But I think asymmetry just makes a lot of sense from a theoretical standpoint.
I mean, when I hear you explain it, it completely does and makes me want to actually go get one.
Pat Curran said, nobody's made a symmetrical board. Like, everything's asymmetrical, like,
it's
in just, the most subtle
it's
nuance.
It's just randomly asymmetrical, though, as opposed to...
You could try your hardest to make it symmetrical. Nobody's that
good. Sure. But if I'm going to get a... I mean, I get all my boards. Has Matt Biolas made
not
an ASIM?
No, not that I know of.
Does he like it?
I don't know. You'd have to talk to him.
Okay, I'm gonna go try to get Biolas to make me an asymmetrical board.
Go for it. I mean, you'd have to... You'll be the first one that he's ever... First
really?
Person he's ever shaped one for, as far as I know. I mean, you'd have to go. I mean, look at Ryan Birch is riding them and really successfully.
Can I go ask Matt Biolas? I mean, can I?
Yeah.
I will go ask Matt Biolas what he thinks about this because I'm very curious.
Yeah.
Why isn't he shaping only asymmetricals?
Yeah. Ask him. I'd be curious to hear what he says. I think listeners would be curious to hear what he says.
Okay.
I've done a number of podcasts with both Donald Brink and Matt Parker talking about this, and Carl Ekstrom, who actually had a patent on asymmetrical surfboard design back in the 60s.
Amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, they're just fighting an uphill battle. They're like, look, dude, the evidence is in. There's zero reason why we ever should have been doing symmetrical boards in the first place.
Sure.
But when you take an asymmetrical board to the beach, every single person, if they don't point and laugh, they point and go, what the heck are you riding, dude? Who are you? Like, what are you?
But on your, do you feel you surf better on one?
I don't. There's no deficit. I will say that. I can't say I surf better or not, but there's zero deficit. There's no moment where I stand up and I go, whoa, what's happening here? No, it just feels like a normal surfboard.
Can you feel, so you don't feel different?
No.
So then what's the point, I guess? Then it doesn't work.
I don't know. You know, it's, you can get, order the same two shortboards from Biolis that are symmetrical and you like one more than you like the other. So how do I know that the asymmetrical board that I got is the parts that I don't like about it, the asymmetry, or is it just, it doesn't have the mojo?
I don't know, but see, I guess that's what, it's something that looks that different.
I know.
If something is a radical design change from what I'm used to, and I don't feel significantly better on it, then I'm going to say it doesn't work.
Right.
Like, you should theoretically, if that's true, if it's that, you know, thinner on your toe side, thicker on your heel side, et cetera, mattered, then you would feel it.
Right.
And if you don't feel it, I'm going to say it's a failure.
Fair enough.
Right?
Yeah, sure. Go with that. Go with that. Keep writing what you're writing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. There's too many variables to really track it all. Like, that's the other thing that I just think from a theory standpoint is, because water's traversing at every different angle and there's too many things to account for, give me simple. Simpler, the better. A straight line, and I'll try to figure out how to work with a straight line. Then once I get really good at that, let's add a curve. See, and then let's add a channel. And then
I've been thinking about this a lot lately, the need for a BeachGrit.com, TM, the Everyman Surf Comp, where you get a bunch of normal surfers out on different boards and have an actual surf contest. Like, surfers at the same, roughly the same level, right? Where when we watch the WSL, there's really good surfers, and I mean, they're all really good, obviously, and some are just clearly better than others. What if we stuck out average guys on different boards and watch what they could do? To me, that would be more telling. You know, it wouldn't be more entertaining, but it would be somehow elucidating of, okay, like, what should we, the average surfer, be trying to ride?
Yeah.
Like, what if somebody, average guy, went out and smoked it on, like, a mini Simmons?
Yeah.
And then you'd think, okay,
that's, you know, what that's, I should be riding.
This is the surfboard for the average man, honestly. Yeah. Or, you know, or if you went out and smoked it on ASIM, or if you went out and smoked it on a square nose tomo or whatever. Like, I think there's enough different or surfboard shape variation, but like the average surfer, and again, I think it's funny, the average surfer, I think, is the standard, right? Like, I think for the people we're talking to now, anyway, very few of us, obviously. I mean, if anybody who can't surf is listening to this podcast, then God bless them.
My mom's listening.
If people who are, like, doing 540/360s are listening, then also God bless them, because that's not who this is for. This is for the guys going out and doing a really sick cut, in his mind, a really sick cutback, right? I mean, what's your best move?
Dude, if I, like, really crack the lip, like, hard and maybe get a little bit of drift, I'm thinking about that for, like, 2 or 3
days.
Sure.
How much spray is going off your lip crack? Is it a full rooster?
I would like to think so.
Like, have you seen pictures of you fully
roostering? I don't see photos of myself, really. No.
But you feel
like I've definitely done, like, drop in, like, full bottom turn, like, straight up into, like, a lip that, like, looks like it's just gonna smack me down, and then I end up drifting through it. And I remember one session at the pier not that long ago where I was then paddling out afterwards, and the guy was like, that was so sick. Or like, I saw, like, that section was so vertical, I didn't think you were gonna crack it, I thought you were gonna go around it, and that was sick. Okay. So, like, one or two of those a month and I'm psyching.
So a proper lip smack.
properly.
See, so that's the thing, I guess. Like, the differences in pros, I think, are vast. The differences in us, it's either a good crack or a really, like, my favorite, when I feel the best is when I do a proper roundhouse, right? Where I hold my rail.
So good.
I hold my rail through, I come back to the whitewash, I rebound off the whitewash, and I'm back into the wave, and then I think I'm the best surfer on the face of the earth.
Rebound off the top of the whitewash.
Yeah.
Like,
I've never done that in my life. Okay. I've only hit the bottom of the whitewash.
Okay.
But I've been able to somehow turn it back around.
Fair enough.
Back into the face of the wave, right? Yeah. But, so, the difference between big crack and kind of crappy rebound is not that much. I reckon the difference between all of the middle, everybody listening to this podcast, is not that much, right?
Yeah.
Like, and so there's got to be a board shape that's better for us.
I agree.
Than another board shape, right? What is that?
I just did a podcast with Dane Hance, who makes a brand called Vulcan.
I love Dane Hance.
Do you?
I love Vulcan. Yeah.
And I think he's making that board.
So Vulcan is my gun. I have a gun. Yeah.
It's 6'2".
I have a Dane Hands gun. I think he gave me it might be 6'8".
Okay.
Proper, like, I told him that, you know, when it gets big, you know, out at, you know, obviously big Encinitas is like not that big. But, you know, in the winter it gets, there's some proper days. And he gave me like a razor thin gun that's it's a beautiful, beautiful surfboard, and I absolutely love it. And he also shaped me another one that's totally great. He's brilliant, right? But what's he shaping?
He's shaping what looks like little spaceships to me. They're like 6 foot around, maybe under, maybe a little over, depending on your height. And they're quads oftentimes, and they have carbon on them, and they're like thicker, flatter, rocker, wider boards that are a lot of paddle power, but like high performance characteristics in the boards.
I mean,
to me, that looks like what you and I think that we're ripping on.
You and I and Beach Grit and Surf Splendor should just do the Everyman Challenge, right? Where we put 20 average surfers, they don't suck. They can do both crack the lip and do a roundhouse out on different boards, and just because there's something we should be riding.
I agree with you.
You're not Kelly Slater, and I'm not.
No.
You know, like Kook on the beach, right? Yeah. Like, you and I are in the same rough ballpark. And so there's got to be a board better for us.
I agree. So, barrel or nah, final category. You forgot we were doing barrel or nah segment.
Yeah.
Read receipts on the phone. You know, you can set so that when you send a text message, it shows you that the other person read it or not.
Oh, not.
Barrel.
Not barrel.
Read receipts, no barrel.
Read receipts were barrel if you had when you had a BlackBerry and you used BBM. Did you ever do that?
No.
This is old technology. Yeah. But if you had a BlackBerry, you could do BBM, so you could, you know, BlackBerry Messenger people, and you would see right away when they read it.
Right.
It's totally an invasion of privacy, I will say. Like, I love reading text messages and not responding for 48 hours. It's a real personal pleasure of mine. And if you take away that, I'm furious. If the person knows, hey, this guy just blew me off for 48 hours, that's rude. Like, sometimes I need to think about what I'm going to say. Sometimes I just don't have the time. I need to read it, but I can't respond then.
I agree. But don't you love when you can see if they've read it or not?
No, I don't want to know. I don't want to know.
Okay.
I guess I'm so aware of my own, like, my own habits do not relate in any way, shape, or form to the care I have for the person. Like, I could read text messages from my wife and not respond for 10 hours. And it's just because I just couldn't think of the right response.
Right.
Or, like, I don't want her to know that I read them.
Okay.
Read
receipts, nah. So we got Tide watches, nah.
Nah.
Cigarettes, nah. Asymmetrical, I say barrel.
And I say, let's do a contest.
Perfect. I'm on board for that. I'll get one of those guys to loan you a board. How's that?
If I can get it, I've never ridden one. I would love to ride an ASIM.
All right. I'll get you a loaner. Read receipts? Nah. So we got 3 nahs, 1 barrel.
I feel, and that's great, because last week, or
it was
last
all
show, it was all barrels.
Yeah. Pretty much all barrels.
Yeah.
I want to, this is not really a segment that you and I need to discuss. I just want to pitch the concept right now, and I want to create kind of a viral movement so listeners can start hashtagging Kook or Curran.
Yeah.
Hashtag Kook or Curran.
Brilliant.
And so this is just something that I've noticed in the water. There's only the biggest kooks in the world do it, or Tom Curran does it, and that's it. Nobody in between. There's no middle-class surfer that is doing these things. It's just the biggest kooks, and so we talked about front traction last time. You've either got Noah Dean doing the craziest front straight air with a front traction, or the guy who has no idea what he's doing and accidentally puts his rear traction pad in the middle of his surfboard.
Yep.
So Kook or Curran right there. I just kind of referenced it last time. We didn't really discuss it, but the GoPro mounted on the nose of your surfboard.
100%.
That's a full Kook or Curran.
Yeah.
Anthony Walsh is getting barreled in at Skeleton Bay for 80 seconds doing it. Or the only time I've ever seen the nose mounted GoPro is Cardiff. The biggest Kook in the world at the beach, right? I thought of a. And then we talked about holding your board with the wax towards your ribs. You and I called it the biggest Kook move. Well, then listeners sent us photos of Tom Curran and Shane Horan doing it.
Yep.
So I was like, shoot, I guess it's not just Kooks. It's Kook or Curran.
Yeah.
So hashtag Kook or Curran. Listeners, tag that whenever you see a post on Kook Slams, Chaz's Instagram, anywhere, hashtag it Kook or Curran, then I'll track them down.
Yeah.
But I've got two new ones for you.
Good.
Okay. Front wetsuit zip. You either see the hipster wearing the jacket that's zipped in the front, and he's like hanging 10 and like totally shredding on a longboard. Or on Kook of the Day, you see a guy wearing
backwards.
Exactly. Full body rip curl zipped up backwards.
Have you done the front zip?
No, I've never done one.
So I've done one in my hipster days because I thought, oh, look, I can make my wetsuit a V-neck, right? This is perfect. And it hits right in your sternum. And it's so uncomfortable to paddle on that, like, I thought, oh, okay, this is why they stopped doing front zips.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's a fashion yes, but technical no.
I feel if somebody did a wetsuit where you could have a scoop neck or a V-neck, then it'd be awesome, right?
Problem is it would take on water.
Who cares? Who cares? Yeah, it's fashion. Right. It's fashion.
All in the name of fashion.
Yeah.
All right, my other Kook or Curran for this week, wearing a rash guard.
Oh, so true.
You see the biggest Kooks in the world wearing rash guards, or Chloe Andino paddling out for his WSL heat?
For sure.
That's it.
When was the last time you put a rashie on?
13 years old.
Yeah. Yep.
It was a bright blue O'Neill. I asked for it for Christmas because I thought it was cool. But that's when wetsuits used to give you rashes.
Sure. But okay, when was the last time you had a chest nipple rash from surfing wetsuitless?
Maybe with a front traction pad.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's what I'm... Okay. I mean, like, my nipples, I'll be honest, hurt right now from today's session.
Because you need to build up a little bit of a callus.
I was on a foamy, too.
Oh.
The pink foamy.
Oh.
I was paddling the kid in.
Which but we figured out last week was barrel.
Was totally barrel. Pink foamy's a barrel. But I feel that there is a total need for the rash guard. Kooks have made rash guards so untouchable that I won't touch it anymore. But we all should be wearing rash guards.
So even though your nipples are raw, you're going to paddle out tomorrow with no rash guard.
Obviously, because you're only a goob if you have a rash guard on, right?
Yeah.
But really, and honestly, and I mean, you don't need sunscreen if you have a rash guard. Like, there's a thousand benefits to the rash guard. It's just that kooks have made them look so bad that you can't do it. But we all should be doing a rash guard, right?
I mean, I think you're right.
I love a nutty tan. And if you're going to go out for a, you know, 20-minute session, great. Okay, Dave Scales.
Yeah.
You're going to go out. It's warm. Do you have somebody rub sunscreen on your back? Do you go out and risk the sunburn? Or what do? Do you do a t-shirt?
No, I never do t-shirt. I always err on the side of caution. I go, somebody rub some. Well, actually, who? I've actually developed a method to touch every square inch of my back with my own hands.
There's no way.
I can.
Use
the back of your hand, and you can get certain parts. And then what that can't get, you get with your other hand.
Really?
Boom. Dude.
No way, Jose.
I can do it.
You're straight. You, like, have you looked after a session in a mirror at your back and just seen the red spots?
There was a period of time where, yes, I did have missed spots, and then I corrected, and I've gotten to the point now where I can cover every square inch of my back
really?
With my own hands. Yeah, and I'm not the stretchiest person in the world.
But you can still do it.
And I do have some fat to work around, and I can still hit it.
So what I do, if I'm like, I was in Selena Cruz not too long ago, I'm a straight button-up guy. I'll wear a button-up, long-sleeve button-up into the lineup.
Such a hipster, dude.
I mean, because
it
works, right? Totally works. That's the thing. It works, except the problem is it catches, like, when you're paddling and you're tired, I've caught the button-up. I'll try to roll up the sleeves, but I've caught the sleeve when I'm trying to push up, and I've totally kooked takeoffs because I got caught up in the, oh, yeah, my sleeve caught. Yeah, if I was less cool, you're right. I guess it is a hipster move because if I was less cool, I would be in a rash guard.
Is the button-up actually buttoned up?
Yeah, yeah. It's buttoned. I'll usually button it the middle two buttons or not middle. Yeah, middle two. So it's super open at the bottom, super V-neck, real flappy. That's all fine and good. So in Selena Cruz, what happened was the particular pink button-up that I had been using for a couple years had been so saltwater rotted that the sleeves ripped off. And then I thought, this is, I've discovered the total future.
Hashtag fashion.
Which was sleeves ripped off of a button-up. And again, the whole thing was so saltwater rotten that the sleeves ripped off. So the whole thing disintegrated, you know, two waves after that. But for two waves, I was in nirvana where it was a sleeveless button-up, but which is cool. But again, and it was cool, don't get me wrong, but it would have been way easier to have a rash guard.
Right. So rash guard.
Rash guard
it's
is...
It's a Cougar Curran, but are we calling it barrel?
It's totally barrel. It's, I feel like...
Beach grit rash guards, dude.
Oh, it's so bad. But why can't we do rash guards? It's because so many Chinese people are doing it.
Dude.
Every Chinese at the beach... Sorry, Chinese.
I'll delete that for you. Yeah.
No, leave it in. So, I'm happy to whack the Chinese. But
yeah, I agree. Like, there's no chance I would wear a rash guard.
Absolutely zero chance. I would take the worst sunburn on earth and or surf in my last t-shirt that was clean and or surf in anything. I would paddle out with an umbrella, honestly, an umbrella to sit with the lineup, like sit in the lineup with my umbrella up and then, oh, here comes the wave. I'm going to put my umbrella down.
Yep.
Somehow get it around my wrist over wearing a rash guard.
But you know who would wear a rash guard other than the kooks?
Tom Curran.
Yep.
Tom Curran wears the rash guard and the hat with the rash guard thing hanging down the back.
Which socks on his ears, too.
The only person I know who wears the hat with the rash guard thing on is the weirdly pale 3-year-old at my preschool daughter's preschool. Like, who his parents are so fearful of the sun, and that's Tom Curran.
They don't feed him gluten either.
Precisely. No. He's like that. He comes to preschool sunscreened up.
And Curran.
Yeah.
And Curran.
Which is Curran.
Hashtag Cougar
Curran. He's Curran. Yeah.
Yeah. Hashtag Cougar Curran.
That's good.
Well, dude, we are both thoroughly drunk. I'm sure you need to get back to your family at this point. Good show. Long show today, dude.
How long did we go?
2 hours.
Oh, it's way long. Sorry, everybody.
We might need to not include alcohol in future conversations.
Son of
no, God. It's actually, you'd be surprised. I get tons of feedback saying I need more content.
People on Beach Grit, and this is, again, just to push it over 2 hours, I think they loathe the long one, where I think if you and I could do a 20-minuter, we'd be gold. But is that possible?
We could do it. I disagree. My feedback has always been, longer the better.
The Beachcrats is like, what the fuck is wrong with a podcast model? Like, did you see the comment where he's like, oh, I listened to the podcast, the Chaz Surf Splendor, and it only went for 4 days, 3 minutes.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, somebody wrote, like, it only went for 6 days, and so, I wanted to go for 15 days.
Okay, so I guess this taps into what I told you last time. Dude, you're just sloppy right now. You just hit your cup against the microphone.
Sorry. So I literally have down a quarter bottle of vodka.
So we're this taps into what I talked about last time, which was my audience is podcast listeners.
Sure.
They were into podcasting, and then I came along and they go, I like surfing and I like podcasting, so I'll listen to this. Now that we're kind of publishing it on Beach Grit, there's people who have never listened to podcasts before, and they're used to, like, give me the Instagram, give me the 3-minute video clips. Like, I have no attention span. So there's very successful podcasts that are literally 4 hours long.
Yeah.
Hardcore History. Dan Carlin makes it, and it's really, really good, and it's interesting. So the benefit of this platform is that you can unpack heady topics and you can go long and whatever and go off on tangents. But for people who aren't familiar with that, I could see why they're saying that. So you and I need to make a decision and just go, hey, do we want to just give them the 20-minute bite-sized stuff to make them happy? Or do we just want to chat about Palm Springs for 20 minutes at the beginning of the show?
No, I mean, I think the whole point of podcast is to go long, right?
Okay, I would argue that.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like, that's, if you don't like podcasts, then you shouldn't listen to podcasts. And
agreed.
Which is fine. And this is the whole point of podcasts, is to do a longer thing. And to do anything other than that is a disservice to the medium.
Perfect. Then we're on the same page.
Yeah, that's what I think.
So my feedback that I get is guys who go, hey, I clean pools for a living for 8 hours, and you only record 1 hour a week, and then I have 7 hours a day left times five.
Yeah. See, do you listen to podcasts?
Yes.
See, I have the only podcast I've ever listened to in my life is Serial, and great. I was driving back from Vegas. Yeah. And what was the one after Serial? The Big Banger, that one with the dude who did the thing.
Yeah, I mean, it was still called Serial. It was just season two.
Was it
Bergdahl? And
yeah. The guy and the thing?
Yeah, it was Serial season two. It was the guy and the thing in Afghanistan.
Oh, no. I didn't listen to that one.
Bergdahl.
No, I didn't care about Bode Bergdahl or whatever. I didn't give a shit about that dude. It was the other one I listened to was, which I loved in the end, and I thought, wait, did I accidentally waste a lot of time? Which was the guy in the South in Alabama and whatever. He was like a total genius, and he committed suicide. Sorry.
Yeah, I don't know.
Spoiler. Man. Oh, it was the one that got better ratings than Serial. It was like the banger of bangers.
Oh.
It was the genius guy, clock fixer guy.
I missed it. Whatever it was, I missed it because I'm not sure what you're
saying. So I listened to that whole one, right? And it was forever. I listened to the whole thing. Those are the only two. Serial, which I thought brilliant.
Audio documentary.
Serial was brilliant start
totally
to finish.
Different
they built
we
it.
Doing.
Boom. The second one, I loved it while I was listening, and then I got to the end and thought, oops, did I accidentally waste 20 hours listening to this thing?
Yeah. Well, people just wasted 2 hours.
See, exactly. That's what I want. I mean, and good on them.
Yeah.
I guess.
But I think, like I said, the focus of this show is pulling back the curtain of Beach Grit.
Sure.
And, like, what's the subtext? What's happening between the articles or behind the scenes of the articles, between the lines, that sort of stuff. I think that's what we should do here.
Are people going to know we were wasted?
Yeah, because we told them. And you're slurring your speech and hitting your glass against the microphone.
So, God bless. Podcast.
Anyways, until next week, get barrel, Chaz.
Oh, and also get wasted. We should let this dead guy sleep.
We should let this dead guy sleep. Thanks again for tuning in, spending 2 hours with us. And of course, make sure to go to surfsplendorpodcast.com, sign up for a monthly subscription, and that'll enter you to win the Motai board bag. Up to a $250 value. And even if you don't win, you can still save 15% off your first purchase simply by financially subscribing to this show. SurfSplendorPodcast.com is where you do that. All right. Thanks as always for listening. Rate and review the show on iTunes. Share the show with friends, as I always say. And I'll be back next week with an all new episode of Wax On, where I have a long conversation with Jordy Smith's coach, Chris Gallagher. We talk about Jordy's strengths and weaknesses, what they're specifically working on, whether or not Jordy will win the world title this year, and how they recuperated from losing to Felipe Toledo in that crazy heat in J-Bay with the double alley-oops. How do you come back from that, strategize, adjust your game plan, and move forward? All of that next week on the Surf Splendor Podcast Network. Wax on with Chris Gallagher. All right? Until then, get out in the water, get a couple of weeks, and shred.